I was a young man, starving and drinking and trying to be a writer. I did most of my reading at the downtown LA Public Library, and nothing that I read related to me or to the streets or to the people about me. It seemed as if everybody was playing word tricks, that those who said almost nothing at all were considered excellent writers. I pulled book after book from the shelves. Why didn't anybody say something? Why didn't anybody scream out? I kept on walking around the big room, pulling the books off the shelves, reading a few lines, a few pages, then putting them back. Then one day I pulled a book down and opened it, and there it was. I stood for a moment reading. Then, like a man who had found gold in the city dump, I carried the book to a table. The lines rolled easily across the page. There was a flow. Each line had its own energy and was followed by another like it. The very substance of each line gave the page a form, a feeling of something carved into it. And here, at last, was a man who was not afraid of emotion. The humour and the pain were intermixed with a superb simplicity. The beginning of that book was a wild and enormous miracle to me. The book was Ask the Dust and the author was John Fante. He was to be a lifetime influence on my writing. I finished Ask the Dust and looked for other books of Fante's in the library. They were of the same order, written of and from the gut and the heart. Fante was my god and I knew that the god should be left alone. One didn't bang at their door. Yet I liked to guess about where he had lived on Angel's Flight and I imagined it possible that he still lived there. 39 years later, I reread Ask the Dust. That is to say, I reread it this year and it still stands, as do Fante's other works. But this one is my favourite because it was my first discovery of the magic. That's enough. Now this book is yours. Charles Bukowski, 1979. Welcome back to Dust on the Road, the John Fante podcast. Today we're looking at the third novel in the Bandini Quartet, and really, the place where I imagine most people begin with John Fante and Arturo Bandini, Ask the Dust. You've just heard an excerpt of the introduction Charles Bukowski wrote for Ask the Dust when it was reissued by Black Sparrow Press in 1980, over 40 years after its original release. To this day, Ask the Dust is widely regarded as Fante's most successful and enduring novel. For me, Ask the Dust was my first exposure to both Arturo Bandini and John Fante. I first read it when I was about 19. I had just started university and I hated everything around me. Mentally, I was a mess. Emotionally, I was a mess. Chemically, I was a mess. I had spent the first few weeks of the year avoiding everyone and everything around me, including my flatmates, including my lectures. I was meant to be doing a creative writing degree, and at that point, I was convinced writing wasn't something anyone could teach, or at least my ego was such that I was convinced writing wasn't something anyone could teach me. My one and only trip to the university campus, I went to the library. I found a copy of Ask the Dust on the shelf, picked it up, walked out, and never went back. That book is the one piece of evidence I have that I ever even went to university, and really, in terms of a writing education, I probably couldn't have done any better. In terms of the sequence of the books, this one is probably the easiest to find our place with. We've covered Arturo Bandini's childhood in Wait Until Spring Bandini, which was published in 1938, and we've gone through Arturo Bandini's late teens in the, at that point, unpublished Road to Los Angeles. It was after the release of his debut, Wait Until Spring Bandini, that Fante wrote to his cousin, Joe, outlining his sketch for what would become his second published novel, saying, "I hope to start my new novel by the first of the year. Right now I'm writing an outline, and it's a big exasperating job." The story is in a Los Angeles background, no Hollywood stuff. Story of a girl I once loved who loved someone else, who in turn despised her. Strange story of a beautiful Mexican girl who somehow didn't fit into modern life, took to marijuana, lost her mind, and wandered into the Mojave Desert with a little Pekingese dog. This new novel was provisionally to be called Ask the Dust on the Road, a line from Knute Hampson's novel Pan, a favourite of Fante's. Ask the Dust begins. One night I was sitting in my hotel room on Bunker Hill, down in the middle of Los Angeles. It was an important night in my life, because I had to make a decision about the hotel. Bandini has had one story, The Little Dog Laughed, published. Otherwise, he is living off oranges, struggling to write, and struggling to find people to recognise his greatness. He meets Camila Lopez, a local troubled waitress, and becomes enamoured with her. The two begin a desperate and tumultuous back and forth that, compared to our other episodes, I won't go into the plot of too much. Simply because I imagine, if you're listening to this, you're probably already pretty familiar with the story. When he was finished writing Ask the Dust, Fante remembered saying to himself, quote, "This is good. Yeah, I've really done something good here." Today, Ask the Dust is seen as one of the most iconic novels ever written about Los Angeles. One of the most famous passages appears in the opening pages, where Bandini says, Los Angeles, give me some of you. Los Angeles, come to me the way I came to you. My feet over your streets. You pretty town, I loved you so much. You sad flower in the sand. You pretty town. When writer Ben Pleasance told Fante, quote, I've never read a book that told me more about Los Angeles than Ask the Dust, Fante replied, it was my gut. It was an easy book to write. It just poured out of me. Another cultural heavyweight who recognised the accuracy of the Los Angeles contained within Ask the Dust is the filmmaker Robert Town, who turned to the novel while putting together dialogue for his upcoming movie, the now legendary Chinatown. In the documentary A Sad Flower in the Sand, Robert Town explains, quote, I was working on the screenplay for Chinatown, and I was having a hell of a time. What I was looking for, at the time, was a book or some document where I could get a sense of the way people talked in the 1930s. Everything that I'd read up to that point, I just didn't believe. I was at this friend of mine's house and saw a book on the shelf, Ask the Dust, and asked him about it. He said, it's kind of interesting. Picked it up and started to read it, and right away it came to life. It had an immediacy that just threw me back into the 1930s, and I knew, the way you know those things, that was exactly how the young people talked at the time. Without any literary convention, this was a guy who had a distinctive voice, and you knew he was very good at capturing his own voice. I went home and I finished it. I was enthralled way beyond my interest in the diction and the use of language for Chinatown. There's another historic event that ties Ask the Dust not just to Los Angeles, but Los Angeles specifically in the 1930s. On March 10th, 1933, a massive earthquake measuring 6.3 on the Richter scale struck Long Beach, and more than 100 people died. This earthquake inspired one of the most memorable scenes in Ask the Dust. After a momentous evening for Bandini, quote, suddenly I felt a rumble, then a roar. The stone bench fell away from me and thumped into the sand. I looked at the row of concessions. They were shaking and cracking. I looked beyond to the Long Beach skyline. The tall buildings were swaying. Under me, the sand gave way. I staggered, found safer footing. It happened again. It was an earthquake. Now there were screams, then dust, then crumbling and roaring. I turned round and round in a circle. I had done this. I had done this. I stood with my mouth open, paralyzed, looking about me. I ran a few steps towards the sea. Then I ran back. You did it, Arturo. This is the wrath of God. You did it. Now the lampposts were falling. Buildings cracked like crushed crackers. Screams, men shouting, women screaming. Hundreds of people rushing from buildings, hurrying out of danger. A woman lying on the sidewalk, beating it. A little boy crying, glass splintering and shattering. Fire bells, sirens, horns, madness. In the aftermath of the 1933 earthquake, a local newspaper report said that, quote, the Long Beach earthquake hurled John Fante, 21, Hollywood writer, from his typewriter to the floor unconscious. Another paper reported that Fante fell 60 feet amidst the tumbling debris, somehow landing uninjured. From this, we can probably guess that Fante had been exaggerating to different journalists different stories about what had happened to him during the earthquake. Certainly, in Ask the Dust, Bandini does the same. Quote, and now listen to the man who was in the earthquake. I sat on the porch of the Altaloma Hotel and told them about it. I saw it happen. I saw the dead carried out. I saw the blood and the wounded. I was in a six-story building, fast asleep when it happened. I ran down the corridor to the elevator. It was jammed. A woman rushed out of one of the offices and was struck on the head by a steel girder. I fought my way back through the ruins and got to her. I slung her over my shoulders. It was six floors to the ground, but I made it. All night I was with the rescuers, knee-deep in blood and misery. Sure, I was scared, but it had to be done. Joyce Fante, John's wife, remembered that when she met John, he, quote, told wonderful stories. Some things were true and some things were not. And it was very hard to separate what had really happened to him from what he had envisioned had happened to him. He took the raw material of life and would rework it into something much more meaningful. Whatever the truth of the events retold in Ask the Dust, there was one thing Joyce was sure of, saying, quote, Arturo Bandini was John. If you read Ask the Dust, you find this tremendous vision he had of himself. And while the star of Ask the Dust is undoubtedly Bandini, Fante's Los Angeles itself plays a key supporting role. After Bandini makes such a big deal in The Road to Los Angeles about ending his novel with the word death, I'm sure it's no coincidence that the final words of Ask the Dust are Los Angeles. Joyce Fante herself said, quote, I think it's the best work ever written about Southern California. In the same interview, she also added, I just never could understand why it wasn't more successful than it was. I always felt it deserved to be. So, why is it that this book, regarded by so many as a classic today, wasn't more successful in its time? Ask the Dust was released on November 8th, 1939, and it had a lot going for it. At this point, John Fante had already released his debut novel, Wait Until Spring Bandini, which had been reasonably well received. His short stories had appeared in prominent magazines, and his publisher wrote to him in 1938 saying, quote, "With the obstacles and difficulties of a first novel fairly successfully over, and with a considerable reputation established, the market will be receptive, and they will believe everything we tell them, so it looks like fairly clear sailing." Not only that, but as we touched upon before, H.L. Mencken, one of America's most influential literary figures at the time, had become something of a mentor for Fante. Their relationship had begun when Mencken had responded to Fante's handwritten story, Altar Boy, with a note saying, "Dear Mr. Fante, what do you have against a typewriter? If you will transcribe this manuscript in type, I'll be glad to buy it." Of Mencken, to his cousin Joe, Fante said, "Long before he printed me, I held a profound admiration for the man. He is an exacting literary man and an editor few writers, please." It's apparent just how significant this relationship was to Fante, as he chose to mirror it in Ask the Dust, where Bandini receives a similar acceptance from an esteemed literary figure by the name of J.C. Hackmuth. Bandini keeps a photo of Hackmuth in his room, saying, quote, "I'd stand before Hackmuth's picture crying out of both eyes, telling him he picked a good one this time, a great one, a Bandini, Arturo Bandini." In Fante's life, the impact of Mencken cannot be overstated. He wrote to him saying that, quote, "I still hold you, and always shall, my ideal of a man, and measure myself by you. I've got to have a God, and you're he." Fante also admitted that, in his attempts to copy Mencken, he, quote, "went beyond mental and conversational gymnastics. It extended to smoking cigars, wearing high shoes, parting my hair in the middle, and staring intently out of one eye at the speaker. I used to be vexed because I didn't know what sort of toothpaste you used, and I used to spend hours and hours aping certain Menckenian expressions I came upon in newspapers and magazines." In Ask the Dust, Mencken himself is also put on a pedestal by Bandini when he's imagining himself among other great writers. Quote, "The library with the big boys in the shelves, old Dreiser, old Mencken, all the boys down there, and I went to see them. Hiya Dreiser, hiya Mencken, there's a place for me too, and it begins with B, in the B shelf, Arturo Bandini. Make way for Arturo Bandini, his slot for his book, and I sat at the table and just looked at the place where my book would be. Right there, close to Arnold Bennett, not much that Arnold Bennett, but I'd be there to sort of bolster up the bees, old Arturo Bandini, one of the boys." On the day of Ask the Dust's release, Fante wrote to his mother, "Dearest mother, my new book is out today. From reports I get, it has every chance of making a lot of money. I say this in view of the letters I've had from my publisher and from the first reviews, one of which appears in the December issue of the Atlantic Monthly. Last Friday, my publisher wired me that he was going to back the book heavily. It is, this new book, a very fine job of printing and binding, and it looks much better than the first book. It is displayed in a window in Beverly Hills, and it is one of the most attractive jackets I've ever seen." A few weeks later, he wrote to his mother again, quote, "The publisher is spending more for advertising of my book than any other book on his list this fall. Everywhere I go, I get great praise of the book." Upon its release, Fante was obviously confident in the quality of his latest work. Writing to his cousin Joe, he declared that he felt, quote, "The writing in Ask the Dust is superior to that in Bandini." Decades later, comparing the two books with writer Ben Pleasance, Fante still held the same opinion, saying, quote, "I think Ask the Dust is a much finer and much more artistic and versatile piece of work." However, despite the publisher's support and Fante's enthusiasm for the book, it wasn't an immediate runaway hit. Writing again to his mother, Fante admitted that, quote, "Some of the reviews are not as enthusiastic as with my first book. However, he was still confident that, quote, on the whole, I think the book is a big success. I shall probably make a little money out of it." Fante wrote again that same week to his cousin Joe. The reviews, he said, are contradictory. Some damn the book as obscene, others wildly praise it. One reviewer said that Fante's prose was, quote, "a kind of poetry," while another said that Ask the Dust was "told in a well-managed colloquial prose, but doesn't add up to much," adding that it was "not as interesting as Mr. Fante's Wait Until Spring Bandini." And so, despite the author's confidence and everything Ask the Dust had going for it, upon its release, amidst mixed reviews compared to Wait Until Spring Bandini, Ask the Dust sold relatively poorly and was soon out of print. In 1940, Fante wrote, quote, "I have written two novels. They both made a little money and got a lot of attention. Looking back, I detest the first novel and think the second better than people imagine." There was another unusual factor that greatly affected Ask the Dust's chances of success. The publisher, Stackpole Sons, had also at this time chosen to publish Hitler's Mein Kampf without securing the rights to it. Their logic for not seeking permission was twofold. One, they didn't want Hitler to make any money off their publication, and two, as Hitler had declared himself a stateless German, copyright law didn't apply to his work. Houghton Mifflin, a publishing company who had previously secured the rights to Mein Kampf, obviously didn't feel the same way. Fante's son Dan wrote in his memoir that he thought that any money that would have gone into publicising Ask the Dust instead went into costly legal proceedings. If we look at the timeline, there's definitely some truth to this idea, or at least the idea that the big impact this had on the publisher did affect Ask the Dust's chances of being a hit. In January 1939, the New York Times ran a story saying that Stackpole Sons intended to base their sales campaign for their unauthorised edition of Mein Kampf on the fact that Hitler wouldn't receive a cent in royalty. However, just before this unabridged version was released, Houghton Mifflin, splitting the legal costs with Hitler's own publishing house, sued Stackpole Sons in US federal court. Fante's editor William Soskin wrote to him saying, quote, "You will forgive me, because these days I have not time, nor thought, nor energy, but communion with Adolf of Munich." In June 1939, the judge ruled in Hitler's favour, asserting that a stateless person is in fact, quote, "entitled to the benefits of American copyright laws." Nor was the court persuaded by the idea that the public had a right to read Hitler's works without supporting him financially. This meant that not only had Stackpole had to endure expensive legal costs, but they'd also printed thousands of copies of Mein Kampf that they were no longer able to sell. The writer Ryan Holiday wrote a brilliant article called How Hitler Nearly Destroyed the Great American Novel, investigating not only the context of the Mein Kampf story, but also how much of an impact that this actually had on the success of Ask the Dust. John Fante, talking to Ben Pleasance, remembered the initial sales of Ask the Dust going well. Quote, "Ask the Dust was reviewed by somebody at the Atlantic Monthly. E.B. Garside was his name, and he gave it a rip-roaring review, just flipped about it, and the result was that it immediately went into its second printing. And then there was a cry for more books, and suddenly the book disappeared from the shelves, and I couldn't understand why. The legal troubles," Fante said, quote, "took over a year and all of the publisher's money. All of the exploitation money for their whole season that year was absorbed by this litigation, and not a word was said about Ask the Dust." While the Mein Kampf legal issues didn't actually bankrupt the publisher, the timeline makes it clear that they certainly did hamper Ask the Dust's chances. Royalty records show that in under 12 months, Ask the Dust sold around 1,600 of its original 2,200 run. In the next two sales periods, however, it sold only 15 and 9 copies. As Ryan Holiday points out in his article, successful novels don't just go from selling well to selling hardly any copies at all, which certainly backs up Fante's assertion that the book, after a reasonably strong start, pretty much disappeared from the shelves and wasn't given the opportunity to appear again. Charles Bukowski, however, had his own perspective on why Ask the Dust didn't succeed right away, saying, "See Mozart, Van Gogh, and so forth. It's the angle of the action. The people aren't ready. It's the weather. It's the diet. It's the shoes they wear, and most of the people are almost always out of touch with the best and the most real because they never had a chance to know what it is." Whatever the reasons for its lack of initial success, today the impact of Ask the Dust is unquestionable. In part, as the introduction to this episode made clear, for the effect it had on Charles Bukowski. John Fante's son, novelist and poet Dan Fante, also did a great amount to keep the Fante legacy and legend alive into the new millennium, speaking highly of Ask the Dust whenever he was asked. "Ask the Dust is simply a seminal novel, a work of utter fucking genius," he said. "You can read Ask the Dust today and change the price of bread, and you could never tell it was written in 1940. There are many other key figures in the rediscovery of Ask the Dust, not least of all Fante's wife, Joyce, who told a friend, quote, "I think that Ask the Dust is a major American novel, and I intend to see that it is recognised as such." However, to a certain extent, for better or worse, the revival of Ask the Dust is inextricably tied to Charles Bukowski. In April 1974, Fante wrote to Carrie McWilliams, talking about a recent reprint of Carlos Bulosan's book, America is in the Heart, which was first published in 1946. Quote, "The reprint of Carlos's book is a beautiful job, and I would give both testicles if the editors could be persuaded to do my Ask the Dust for their list." Even 35 years later, John Fante obviously knew that deep down, Ask the Dust was a book that still deserved more. And, despite the relentless efforts of Ben Pleasance and others to get Fante republished, it wasn't until the intervention of Bukowski and Black Sparrow Press that the ball really got rolling again. There's a famous passage in the Bukowski novel Women, where the main character, Henry Chinaski, is asked for his favourite writer. "John F.A.N.T.E., he says, author of Ask the Dust. Why did you like him?" he's then asked. "Total emotion," he says. "A very brave man." John Martin of Black Sparrow Press ended up asking Bukowski about this scene one day. In A Sad Flower in the Sand, he recalled the story, saying, quote, "And later, after the book was published, a year or so, I was talking to Bukowski on the phone, and I for some reason asked him about that scene, and said, 'There's no such person, is there?' And he said, 'Of course there is,' and I was really shocked. And it took me almost a year to get a copy of Ask the Dust. None of the libraries had it, no bookstores had it. It wasn't in print and hadn't been for 40 years. And I was finally able to get a Xerox copy of the book from the LA Public Library, and when I read it, I knew I had run across a classic. And at that time, Bukowski was very big in Europe, France and Germany and Italy, so I asked him if he would write a preface to Ask the Dust, because I knew it would help with overseas sales, and I knew it would certainly help here in America. And then the book took off. In less than 20 years, I'm sure we've sold several hundred thousand copies, and that many more in Europe and translation." By the time Ask the Dust was republished, Fante was, sadly, in the later stages of his life. In spite of his ill health, Joyce remembered the effect being republished had on him, saying, "When he was rediscovered and began being republished by Black Sparrow Press, he was very happy. He, of course, was, by that point, a blind man and also a double amputee, but I took the new copy of Ask the Dust to him. He was in hospital, and he held it in his hands and I described it to him, and he was so happy. He couldn't have been happier." Fante didn't live long enough to see it happen, but in 2006, after decades of attempts, Ask the Dust finally managed to make its way onto the big screen. Unfortunately, the Hollywood production, starring Colin Farrell and Salma Hayek, was pretty disappointing. Although, to be honest, a bit of me thinks given the quality of the writing in Ask the Dust, any attempt to translate it to film was always going to lose a bit of the magic. In 2018 alone, Ask the Dust sold more copies than its entire original printing all those years ago. It's 80 years later, and people are still finding and falling in love with Ask the Dust. And as for Fante and Bandini, well, with the renewed public interest, they still had one last ride to go.